I had two guys, you and another league member, pretty close here. And honestly, I didn't think there was a whole light of daylight between the two of you in terms of, you know, who I'd rather have. I flipped a coin, which was that little pause you heard. You were heads. The coin came up heads. So I took you. So, yeah, so that's pretty much what it came down to, just the flip of a coin, and who knows what could follow from that.
All right, welcome back, everybody. So, once again, something pretty different here for you guys today. And if you have no idea what is going on here, I don't blame you at all. I have been in a fantasy football league, to kind of cut right to the chase, for the last coming up on a decade now at this point, with a bunch of my best friends from high school. And we've actually secretly, essentially, been doing private kind of league-wide podcasts over the last couple of seasons. And between those podcasts and a decade-long group chat and a ludicrous amount of statistical information charting every week that we've ever played against each other in way more detail than anyone could ever deem necessary, a lot of storylines and rivalries and so forth have developed in this league that, at a time where Survivor is off the air, I figured why not at least give it a shot if, you know, reality TV fans might be interested in some big personalities feuding and hurting each other's feelings. Why not put it out there if the guys in the league are comfortable with it and they appear to be down? This is a group of guys that, at least privately, has seemed to taken a liking to long form podcasting just kind of as a medium, and we're happy to open things up to a wider audience now that we are embarking upon truly one of the wildest kind of end games that we have ever seen. So in that intro podcast that I released, I gave a far too long kind of backstory. And then the second half of that was a podcast that was actually recorded in late August, I believe, where two of the guys in the league served as team captains drafting who they wanted in their division this year before we knew who was going to get whom on their team or how anything was going to play out. It was all about just, how much do you respect the other guys in the league as fantasy football general managers? It's always a very exciting event, annual tradition for us every year. So a lot of, I'm guessing, the things that may confuse you today along the way are probably answered somewhere in there. But I think without much else I can come up with to get to before we bring in our guests, let's do just that, I suppose. Joining me now for the first official public podcast here are two league members I'm very excited to have on for the debut. I think both great representatives of the spirit of the league, and two guys who are themselves still very much alive in the hunt here as we get down to this kind of nail biter finish. So we'll get more into the specifics on that shortly, I suppose. Let's first introduce a guy you may have heard in that intro podcast as one of the captains drafting his division entering the 2020 season. Now, it's about 3 months later, and he is back here to update us on how all of that has gone for him, making his consensual podcast debut. Welcome back, Matt Cavanaugh. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Colin. Thanks for having me on.
Very excited to get your takes here today. A lot has gone on since the last time the listeners will have heard from you at this point. So eager to dive into plenty of different things here with you today. And joining us for the occasion is someone I think it's fair to describe as one of the league's kind of scrappier underdogs, I would say. May have gotten off to a worse start compared to average than most fantasy football general managers, but he has plowed through, he has put his head down and grinded it out for many, many years at this point, and is finally, at least potentially, on the verge of one of the all-time kind of underdog hero stories that our fantasy league has ever seen, or perhaps on the verge of complete fantasy heartbreak for like the ninth year in a row. Welcome to the podcast for the first time, Christian Winkelhofer. Wink, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me. Good to chat with you too.
Yes, I know I've been rambling. What else is new for a little bit here, kind of setting everything up. But to kind of cut to the chase of what we're doing here today, we are going to be talking through the short version of how things have played out since that divisional draft and how things are looking now, entering week 13 here, the final week of the regular season in our fantasy football league, at least. And there are a ton of very tight races here in many different respects. The long and short of it is we have a 10-team league where 8 teams are still alive with a chance at the championship. 2 teams are out of it, and 3 of those 8 are locked in for playoff spots. And what we have facing us in week 13 is 5 teams vying for the final 3 playoff spots. Wink, I want to start with you because you are one such team here. What has this last week been like for you, knowing how big this swing is here upcoming?
I mean, better than the previous two. Had a good record, was flying high, and made a couple of trades I thought were beneficial to me. Going for, you know, the less sexy names, just the solid weekly producers, and 2 trades particularly really came back to bite me, and I've shed some of my talent, but I've been fighting every week, and I was fortunate enough to run into you with your worst week of the season last year to really give me a lifeline, honestly. That one win is absolutely tremendous going into this final week, so I'm very nervous, you know, even being alive this late is still uncharted territory for, you know, a historically impoverished team such as myself, but I'm excited to be here, feeling good going into Sunday.
Well, I briefly laid this out in the intro podcast, and actually, this may be a more fun exercise to do in reverse. How about, Matt, you briefly summarize for us Wink's backstory as a fantasy general manager and all the heartbreak that he's gone through.
Well, Wink came to the league a few years after it had already started. I believe he started in 2013. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, Wink. And when he first started playing, my understanding is that he did not have a smartphone or like consistent internet access. So fantasy football is a game where you need to be pretty frequently following what's happening in the NFL and making changes almost daily, certainly every few days with the changing news from the NFL. And so Wink was at a sizable disadvantage in that he did not have a reliable internet connection on which to do that. And it was sort of the subject of a lot of banter in the league. On top of that, and I think that was only maybe a couple of years, and I think he got that all squared away and he's now fully connected. But on top of that, he has been, I will say on his behalf, historically and statistically improbably very unlucky. He has gone up against every year just a brutal schedule in terms of his competition on a week-to-week basis and the teams that he randomly has to play against. So, I mean, it's been a long road for Wink, and I think he has a third-place finish from either last year or the year before. He would know better than me on the exact finishes. Actually, I'll pull up Luke's thing as I'm talking to review that. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Wink has had – he has had a journey, and I can understand why he would have some nerves about this week, because he has had a 1-5 stretch over the last 3 weeks after a 6-0 stretch. So things have kind of taken a turn for him coming into this last week. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I think things are at.
Yeah, I feel like this is either going to go really – well, and like if this were a TV show, Wink would be one of the heartwarming stories of the season. Or, and apologies to you two guys who do not watch Survivor. That's one thing I probably should have clarified in the initial podcast is none of the other guys watch Survivor or care at all about this podcast and don't really know what they're getting into here. But Wink is like the Brains tribe from Kageyan, where historically at least, it seems like there have from time to time been reasons to get their hopes up, but the football, and I guess this case, in this case the literal football, always gets pulled out from underneath them. And fingers crossed, Wink, that this is not one such season for you there. But I do imagine that you would be one of the people, and not to be insanely heavy-handed about the, all these narratives or whatever, but I do think you would be, if people had a full picture of the history of the league, while not one of the more accomplished teams at the, as things stand right now, certainly one of the fan favorites. People love to pull for an underdog, and I certainly am one such person. So definitely looking forward to seeing how this goes for you. Who are you faced up against this week? I should certainly know this off the top of my head here, but what are you thinking about in terms of your conditions for getting in or not getting in?
So I was given a solid enough final week matchup. I'm against Andy, who has his top quarterback and running back on bye. I'm dodging Christian McCaffrey and Teddy Bridgewater and maybe someone else. And in being matched up against one of the other people sweating for the final spots, it enables me to, as we like to say, control our own destiny, something I haven't gotten to do too often. So if I'm able to beat Andy and make top five, I'm guaranteed a spot in the playoffs. So on that front, I'm feeling pretty fortunate. But my career trajectory has taught me, you know, much like the Buddhist, all life is suffering. So I wait with bated breath. I feel like at this point in my fantasy life, I'm kind of just like a really weary Siddhartha who still just like hasn't found enlightenment. I'm still at the anger issue phase, feeling like the world's out to get me. So we'll see. But I did, thanks to you and Luke providing all these wonderful statistics, I did find an interesting little fact, which is in my whatever it's been, I think this is year nine, year eight for me in the league, and I've had a far harder than average schedule in all but one of those years, and the only year in which my average opponent was over the 5.5 threshold was 2 years ago when I placed third. And this year, my schedule is of the easier variety. So I'm really hoping that points the direction towards a playoff berth for me.
Yeah, I certainly am as well. Wink, you know I've been a big advocate for your advanced statistics, probably painting a nicer picture of your overall performance than your actual results would indicate over these last couple of years. Like
you're my biggest fan, Tom, and I appreciate it.
You are welcome, man. I'm just a fan of numbers. I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry. it happens to be you. I am certainly pulling for you, Matt. Would it be classic Colin Stone hyperbole here to describe a hypothetical Wink championship this year as the biggest story in league history?
That's hard to say. I mean,
if each season were a TV show, essentially, sorry that not everyone thinks like me.
I could see it. I could see it. I mean, he definitely has that element of kind of tremendous amounts of adversity. And if he does get into the playoffs, it'll be kind of a nail biter as he, you know, has 1 week left to clinch his spot. So it would certainly make for compelling TV. I know that. And it might be the best storyline in league history. But I'm less certain on that. I mean, yeah. Yeah. I think about like one of Ike's early championships. Yeah, that wouldn't be a good – even though he kind of got in as a low seed and won the championship, if he wasn't an underdog, he'd
no one was
won.
Happy for him.
Yeah. So it probably would be. You're probably
you,
right.
It makes you believe fantasy luck could fall to anyone after Ike takes three or four. So.
Yeah. I certainly – if it's not going to be me, I would be very much into a timeline where we do end up with Wink joining the winner's circle. And I will more generally say – I was actually thinking about this – last night, if it isn't me, I think I would probably be rooting for anyone of the many people who has, I think actually everyone who has yet to win a championship is still alive here in the hunt. I would probably root for any of the four of you guys over anyone to repeat.
Well, thank you.
Yes, the highest praise, I'm sure. So let's hold off, I think, on for the time being on the other teams kind of in that big game of musical chairs here with you, Wink. Let's take a look at the top here where three teams are locked into the playoffs. Matthew, you will not know this, and I've done a bad job not even slightly alluding to this yet. This episode will begin with a cold open that I didn't even have any memory of until I was editing that podcast to put up last night. In the divisional draft, when you were making your, I guess it would have been third selection, you paused for a moment to flip a coin when deciding between me and Christian Pieri. It came up heads. You selected me. And a very, potentially at least, prescient quote was issued by you that served as a cold open for this very podcast. What are your thoughts now on the significance of that coin flip as we transition into the teams that are locked into the playoffs, and how do things look for you?
Yeah, I did notice that quote when I listened to the episode you put up of the draft. Yeah, you know, it does look like it could potentially be quite meaningful in that I'm fighting with you for a playoff spot. You're one game up on me. And if I don't get it, I will certainly think back on that moment, but I don't really regret the coin flip. I mean, I think after this season, if I were to draft again, I think you've played pretty well. Maybe I would take Peary over you, but I think at the time that kind of, I mean, I really did have you guys even, and I flipped a coin thinking, you know, if I do introduce this random element, I won't say, well, I just, you know, I read it wrong because I left it up to, as Luke said, Lady Variance.
Mm-hmm. Just to quickly clarify, since it may just contextually sound weird, we are fighting for a playoff bye. We are locked in as playoff contenders.
Yes, my mistake. Right.
Which the bye is enormous. The bye in our league is worth a great deal.
The bye in our league is enormous, and Colin and I are the top two teams, but we are in the same division. Isaac is in the other division. The division winners get the bye, and Isaac has already clinched his bye by virtue of winning his division. So one of Colin or myself will get the bye in our division. And it's a big week for us in that way. But I don't look back on the coin flip with too many regrets. We'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, and I would certainly be remiss not to mention that you are entering this podcast coming off of only the third 300-point week in history. We've played, I think, 110-ish, 115-ish total weeks as a league, which means over 1,000 lineups have been submitted. You were the third person ever to hit 300 points. So congratulations on that, and suffice to say, it has been a very strong year from you overall. Wink, I want to give you your turn to set up the stakes here in terms of Matt's career trajectory and how meaningful a potentially powerhouse team ending in a championship might be for him.
Yeah, one quick note, just to split hairs here. While Matt is the third team to reach 300, he's only the second person. He's actually achieved it twice.
Yes, that's true.
So that's impressive in its own right, I think. But anyway, to lay the groundwork of Matt, I'm not sure how he was received the 2012, the year prior to me coming in, but
very
in my memory, and I don't have good memory of the early years, but he's generally been a punching bag, and part of that is just mindless babbling from Lucas when he's bored and or intoxicated. But the other part of that is warranted from some pretty lousy years. You had a team name
I can't remember what it is exactly, but alluding to being, you know, unprecedentedly bad.
Historically bad, I think, yeah.
Historically bad. It's held up. But beyond that, at least as early as last year, had a powerhouse team, was, I'd say, the team most people were threatened by for most of the season, and unfortunately got the bye and then lost back-to-back weeks and did not podium despite leading the league in points and a lot of other categories. So coming into this year, I think a lot of people wanted to cast that off as a fluke. There's been a lot of chatter about Matt's strategy and whether he truly is an ardent believer in what he's doing or if he's just looking hindsight 2020 and then adopting that as his mantra. But a year later, he's got another great team and could potentially get a bye 2 years in a row, which is not the easiest feat. So him versus you, that's an intense final week, you know, in and of itself. I'm envious of that battle over the fight for life I'm involved in, but Matt's got a very good team. So that should catch you up a little bit.
Yes. I think that is very well put. A lot here, I would say, at stake for Matt after many, many years of suffering, finally really turning things around in 2019 and here again in 2020, kind of a prove it year, I would say, for you, Matt, but at least for my money. I have done a pretty sharp adjustment on my evaluation of you as a fantasy general manager. And as I mentioned, you were coming off a 300 point week. As you mentioned, I'm coming off my worst week of the season, and hopefully neither of those things is repeatable next week or anytime going forward. But I did want to actually ask you, Matt, what days, if literally any, from your whole life stand out as more fun than sweating a 300 point fantasy day?
I mean, in the fantasy context, it's right up near the top.
I mean, in life. Really,
yeah. In life, you know, it's hard to compare, once we start going outside of fantasy. I mean, it was a fun day. It was a fun day. And I had a couple good performances on Thursday, which was Thanksgiving. So there was kind of a nice, it was really a sort of a whole weekend. And I was going against Lucas.
A reality overlap.
Yes. Yes. And I was going against Lucas, and a little bit of banter was exchanged. So it was nice. That made it extra sweet. It was a fun day, man. Fun day of sweating football.
Yeah, I'm not sure you're understanding the question. You've spent a lot of time with your fiance, Kelsey. I'm looking for a list of, you know, surely some events with her were less fun than no, I'm just kidding.
Yes, some events with her were less fun. Other events, though, were more fun. So shout out to Kelsey. Great girl. It was a fun day. I don't know if I would say it was a top tier lifetime, all things considered, but it was probably the best fantasy day I've had.
Actually, was Kelsey watching with you, and does she care much about your fantasy team?
She does care. She doesn't really like football that much. I watch it a lot, and she watches it sometimes with me. She's pretty up on the league. She always asks me how things are going. She's much more concerned with whether people are being nice to one another than she is with the kind of the standings and who's up and who's down. So that's kind of how that's the perspective she's usually coming from with things.
And at what point do you think she's going to eventually give up on that and just say, all right, I guess they're going to keep being mean?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a cold world out there, and she's still rolling with it. So she might be ride or die on that piece.
Yeah. Matt, we are locked into a pretty tight race here for the bye in our division. I do have a one game lead on you, although it is worth clarifying, actually. I don't know if any of this has become apparent through context or not to this point, but we actually play in a league with some slightly adjusted rules where it's very annoying to be the second highest scorer and have your team go nuts and just so happen to get unlucky and run into the top scorer. So while we still have that in play, that's only half of the metric for us. So each week we have one head-to-head matchup, and then also you get an additional win or an additional loss depending on if you were in the top five scorers or the bottom five scorers, respectively. So there are two wins per week up for grabs, which leaves me a little nervous here, Matt, that it seems like I may need to go specifically 2-0 to stay ahead of you, considering the points lead you have on me here. My team, I don't feel like, has been too thrilling along the way. I guess the big point of drama, the big sliding doors moment for me and how things would ultimately go on to play out is I was the guy who luckboxed Dak Prescott super early and then unluckboxed him getting a broken ankle in like week 5 or 6 or whatever, and then re-luckboxed Justin Herbert. So a decision that I guess we'll get probably more into a little later on from the other person's perspective has really bailed me out, frankly, from what could have been a drastically worse timeline. I have more or less, as far as I'm concerned, just kind of crafted a plan, stuck to the plan, and it so far has been working out. But Matt, how would you describe my history within the league, and what is at stake for me here?
Interesting. I would say that Colin came into the league back in, I guess, 2011-ish. And he came in with a, characteristically analytical perspective that I think some of us kind of had at the time, but probably not as much as we do today. And I think 2013, I believe, was the year Colin had the best team that anyone has had to date and kind of the most dominant year. So he won the championship that year. Shout out to the Old Stone Creamery, I believe was the team name.
Yes.
Since then, though, I don't think he's been back to the championship at all. And he's kind of there is starting to be some chirping, questioning some of his kind of decision making amongst the people. I think that Colin, I mean, he is the guy doing the stats and the podcast. He's very dialed in. Nobody questions that. But I think some of the decision making and potentially the approach does get questioned at times. So I think, like for a lot of us, it is kind of a statement year in that a championship to cap off a season where Colin has done very well would be a statement, and it would say, you know, this approach, there is something to it, and eat me haters. But that's kind of, I think, where things stand with Colin.
Yeah, and I don't think that's unfair. I would say I've never really had bad teams. I've just never really, other than that one year, been able to break through much further beyond just kind of middle of the pack. I fluked my way into third place one other time and then literally forgot about it because my team wasn't even that good and the season wasn't memorable. So this is very important to me, the idea that my time could potentially come again here, and I could become only the second person to have multiple championships. But yeah, I am, suffice to say, very nervous after week 13. Historically has just not been my friend in general. And while I have no scenario where I can outright miss the playoffs this year, I am probably once bitten, twice shy after the way week 13 played out for me last season, which we don't need to get into the specifics on here, but I am certainly going to be traumatized anytime I see that number for at least the foreseeable future. The only thing I wanted to add about my team isn't even specifically about my team. It's just the one kind of fantasy football take I have been dying to get on the record publicly for a while, but have never had an opportunity to do so, talking about nothing but reality TV. And you two have certainly heard me talk about this before as well. I thought it was so funny that if you listen to like all the experts and consensus rankers and whatever leading up to your Fantasy League's draft, there was so much discussion about the idea of modified zero RB. You know, zero RB was a very famous draft strategy where you hold off on getting a big powerhouse running back and stock up on guys who are really going to eat up targets and receptions early, and you can pick up some reasonable running backs in the seventh, eighth, and so forth that can really pop, or even beyond that, that can pop later and just print money. It has evolved to the point where they call the new strategy modified zero RB, which in my mind is walking the listener down the path of this is more or less the same idea as zero RB. The problem is zero RB is completely rooted in, okay, first of all, you take your powerhouse running back and you don't even think about it. That's just a no-brainer. And then modified zero RB is after that, now we're taking zero RBs, which as far as I'm concerned is like the opposite of zero RB or very close to it. And that has always greatly annoyed me. And I've been wanting to say that publicly for such a long time here. So there is finally that out of the way. Wink, anything else from you on my team or the situation at hand here in terms of what you think would be relevant or thoughts on your end as I enter this nightmarish week for me?
I mean, I think it really is a big chance. I mean, we had Isaac win 3 of 4 right off the bat. And so I think it led everyone to believe that that would be normal for people to repeat. And though we've had people have opportunities to do that, even in back-to-back years with Andy, Gabe, and Vanna, no one's got more than one. There's still 4 of us with 0. So it would be enormous if you could get a second win with really your only knock. I mean, you're always consistent, but the only knock is that you have potentially a flawed end game.
Yeah.
That you build a very strong team, but never making the risk to be the strongest team. So I think it would go a long ways in boosting, you know, if nothing else, your respect and historical remembrance in these early years, if you could take 2 out of the first 10.
And let me clarify, I share the league-wide concerns about my endgame approach here. I'm not excited to be starting Nyheim Hines this week. Maybe I should be. Seems like some reasonable game flow there, but I just felt like contextually, and we don't need to get into the nitty-gritty of it, I felt like standing pat for the most part made a ton of sense for me this year. So we will certainly see how all of that ends up playing out. But let's touch on our final team here that is locked into the playoffs. And despite Matt being below the two of us in terms of overall standings, has locked up a first round playoff bye and the right to draft whatever division he wants next year. You will be shocked to hear that Isaac Brower has once again caught a huge break. The guy who won 3 of the first 4 championships appears to be back up to his old tricks. Matt, present for us, if you can, the history of Isaac within the league and the kind of vibe that he brings to things.
Okay. So Isaac, as we've mentioned now a couple times, he won 3 of our first 4 championships. And Isaac is the younger brother of Lucas. They are 2 brothers together in the league. And I think it's fair to say, and I don't even know that Isaac would disagree, that for a long time he had very much a little brother vibe to him, where he'd kind of desperately wanted everyone else in the league to say that he was doing a good job. And when he made moves or trades, to say that they were good trades. To actually, on that element, to this day, he still sort of will make a trade and quickly look for, you know, what do people think about it, what do people think of the moves. So the irony, though, is that even though he won 3 of the first 4, he does not get very much respect from the rest of the league, and it's because he is a very, very lucky boy. And I think this year, you know, he's has a good team. I don't think he has a team that would expect to have the bye locked up as of week 12 as he does. So one could argue another example of him getting a little bit lucky. I will say, though, just as a a personal note, my respect for Isaac as a fantasy GM has grown this year, particularly with some of the all-time stats where he is actually ranked higher than I would have expected based on kind of how things have gone in the regular season and just generally. I will say that the other thing that kind of contributes to Ike's dilemma is he seems to always be doing very well, but when he talks about his players or his strategy or his thoughts, very often it seems that kind of the opposite thing will happen. So he'll say he hates a guy and he's going to drop him, and that guy will be, you know, the best player on his roster that week. So I think that does hurt him in his quest for respect.
Yeah, I think Isaac would be the heavy front runner in many seasons to be the sprint fan favorite. Everybody loves Isaac as a guy, and with very good reason. The key element, I think, as far as fantasy is concerned, is that item you addressed of a lot of it seems like he is succeeding despite his own best efforts to not do the things that are working out for him. And I was thinking about this earlier today and alluded to this actually in a post I made in our group chat. But Wink, based on how this season has played out, you know, Isaac is here with another first round bye, only two wins away from his fourth championship in whatever it would be, 9 or 10 years. If he were to go on to win this season, how would he change in your mind? How would his legacy change in your mind?
I mean, as far as my like viewing of whether he's good at fantasy or not, it wouldn't change in the slightest. But that's coming. I mean that earnestly, you know, but that's coming from someone you can't argue with numbers like that. So like if Isaac has four, I have to say, Isaac, you know, you win, you know, whether you do. And for me, that's coming from someone that's the opposite. I think I'm perennially just the turd at the bottom of the pool? No. I think I put in a depressing amount of effort, and I think at any given time in the season, I'm actually quite high as far as knowing what's going on just across the board and a lot of useless information. But I have found a way to lose over and over again. So that's why I don't debate people when they rank me poorly and say I'm bad at it, because, you know, the numbers don't lie. So whether luck plays into it, which I think in both of our cases it does, if Isaac wins four, which he very well may, it would not surprise me. I mean, good for him. You can't take those away. So whether he gets the respect or not, you know, he's got the glory. You know, so I don't think my opinion will change too much. I don't think his team was very good this year. He, on a weekly basis, is unclear on rules, or even coming into a draft every year, there's probably a list of 8 to 25 players he doesn't know what team they're on. And then throughout the year, he misunderstands who's injured, who's not, you know, is this a guy, oh, I started, you know, my flex position ahead of time. There's all these little, the minutiae of the game are fully lost on him, and I don't blame him, because it's never once come back to bite him. So Isaac lives in a happy, happy place that we're all envious of, and for that reason, he'll never garner the respect he claims to desire, because he frankly hasn't done anything to earn it, but we're all envious of him. He can just take pride in that. You know, things have broken his way and not others. And that's wonderful. You know, he's not a total buffoon, but he's certainly no savant.
Great guy though. So
wonderful guy. Can't say enough good about him as a person.
Yeah. Shudder to think about what percentage of the listening audience would be rooting for Isaac, because I'm confident he would be one of the fan favorites in this league, and hopefully we.
How can you not, dude? He's a nice, positive, happy young gentleman. You know, he's a good guy.
Yeah,
good guy. Big believer in Dale Carnegie's philosophy of interacting with people.
I mean, I got to credit Ike a little bit with my own, you know, turnaround of, while I'm still, you know, relentlessly capable of being a curmudgeon, it certainly has waned in my years recently. And part of that is just attempting to buy into the ABP, the always be positive movement Isaac has pushed upon us. So yeah. He's making people better in reality, even if we never respect him in fantasy.
That's good. He's definitely doing the Lord's work out there in the real world. So those are our teams that are locked in. We will be hearing from them either in week 13 or in week 14, and potentially beyond that. Let's quickly touch on the teams who are out of it at this point. And I really wish I had known that I was going to be doing this from the beginning and put more time and effort into crafting podcasts along the way here, because we missed out on two all-time great kind of comeuppance edits here if this were a TV show. Currently sitting in last place, Matt, I'm going to give you the floor here on this one. The man that you were in here in the intro podcast drafting divisions with, your great rival Lucas Brower, now has to sweat out wearing his second, third, fourth, maybe career loser helmet at next year's draft. Matt, what is your version of how things have gone for Luke this year?
Yeah, I think it's been a tough year for Luke. He had an 0-8 or an 0-8 stretch that was then a 1-9 stretch. He's currently sitting on an 0-4 stretch over the last couple of weeks. So he's in 10th. He's got quite a bit fewer points than anyone else in the league. And I said it on one of the earlier podcasts, but I just am not sure that he really is following the NFL in the modern day. I think that he somehow, somewhere around 2016 or 2017, he kind of entered like a forced field where the best players at that time got locked into his head as perennially guys to kind of seek out and own, which is something that can always happen, I think, in fantasy football and is one of like the big parts of the game. But I think with him, that was the time and place that he got drawn to. So, you know, his season is done in terms of there's not going to be a playoff run this year. He'll be back in the future. The thing with Luke is the trash talk is really – it's not connected at all to how things are going, particularly when he's not doing well. If he's doing well, it'll be loosely connected to how things are going. But in general, it's sort of this – weird abstraction of things that can really come from any direction. And so that's kind of, you know, you're getting that coming in. So that's kind of the lay of the land. And the guy's got a lot of rivalries, so he keeps the people excited. But I think, as you said on a previous podcast, Colin, not a year that he will look back on too fondly.
Yeah, although he's had a lot of years like this, I would say, where he's basically out of it by Thanksgiving, and it's probably better suited to handle this than others may be. But where we should definitely acknowledge something is Luke was the guy who lost Saquon Barkley right away, and it's probably arguable that others would have put in a stronger effort to try to fill that void and look for ways to turn things around. I got the sense that Luke probably was not feeling this season too much after that went down. And it has been kind of a rough, as you laid out, match, stretch of weeks here with mostly 0-2 weeks with a couple of wins sprinkled in here and there. Wink, what do you think about the just dynamic Luke brings to the league in general?
Yeah, I mean, he's someone that likes to ruffle feathers. Part of the issue, though, is he's going to be screaming into the void whether there's chickens around or not. I mean, he doesn't need any feathers there to ruffle. He's going to go through the motions regardless. So it's been weird, it's been weird to watch Luke, you know, make his kind of death gasps a couple weeks ago, and then weeks later reopen the wounds he may have felt in the moment with Vanna once he kind of reality set in. A delayed reaction was a little odd there. But Luke and Isaac, despite being people I perennially just bash, and I mean what I say about them, but they are part of the little three brotherhood with myself, and they've had my back in the past years. So I don't like to see this for Luke. And as someone that historically he has a win, and it was a great championship run, but other than that, I mean, he's considered down at my level. You know, he's oftentimes a mildew-infested basement dweller like myself and for many years Matt and our good friend Adam kind of cast into these dungeon roles. And so I'd like to see Luke do better. But I think the biggest thing here, Luke, you know, he got some real life positivity this week. He got his first ace in disc golf, which is a tremendous feat. It's a really amazing feeling. I've played for 4 years and I have only one myself. And I think that has lifted his spirits. I was really happy to see, though I think there will be some, you know, very loud chirping about it, but I was happy to see him still go after Mitchell Trubisky on waivers. And because though he's out, and I respect this for sure, he's fighting to not wear the helmet. And as much as we laud people who have championships and, you know, those who have not, we revile those who wear the helmet. And Vanna has never stooped to that level. And as a perennial favorite, if Luke were to overtake Vanna this week, and to see Derek 1 year wearing a wondrous green robe of the victor, and the next year wearing just the disgusting, sad, sad 1980s loser helmet, that's a big deal. So Luke really does have a lot to play for. And I think that's going to inspire a good, probably 2-0 week from him. And none of that has to do with me being directly in competition with Christian Pieri, who Luke's playing.
Yeah.
It's definitely not wishful.
No, of course not. This is purely altruism here. Yeah, it is pretty remarkable to me that Luke is somehow not the biggest villain potentially in the hunt here for the loser helmet. Also not going to be in the playoffs with us this year is Derek Vanna, who was the default pick at the end of that divisional draft. He's frankly dominating pretty much every advanced statistic that we have over the all-time record books. And sorry, what was that?
He's dominating.
Yes, thank you. you're fitting right in here on this podcast. He shows up here, though, this year, and as I alluded to earlier, I got very lucky with landing Justin Herbert, who took over the starting job in like week 4 or 5 or whatever, and so I knew he was someone with some upside. He was at least going to be out there playing, but he hadn't really yet blown up. And I know, at least in Vanna's mind, a lot of this season comes down to, and it probably fairly so, the decision I put in front of him, which is I just picked up Antonio Brown, whom I know he is absolutely in love with. And I said, listen, I just lost Dak Prescott. I am not interested in streaming QB2 we're a 2-quarterback league. I'm not interested in streaming QB2. I want someone I can feel at least okay about starting for the time being. So Antonio Brown is yours, and you can either choose your own adventure here between I'll take Cam Newton or Justin Herbert. And Vanna, a lifelong Patriots fan, said, all right, here's Justin Herbert. And I think if he had said, here's Cam Newton, we would be looking at a completely different situation right now, because his team has been fairly solid other than quarterback, but that's just been killing him. And he is now going from defending champion, all-time statistical monster wreaking havoc on the league for close to a decade to, for the first time potentially ever, in the hunt to wear the loser helmet on draft day. I know, again, apologies to the two of you, but to pull a Survivor example, Vanna this season would be getting an all-time Chris Noble edit here. And this would be one of the juicier storylines if this were indeed a TV series here. But Matthew, describe a bit about just Vanna, his persona, and how he might react to going from the guy everyone's afraid of to the guy wearing the loser helmet.
Yeah, that's a good one. As Colin said, Derek has had probably the best, I mean, really not probably, he's had the best career statistically of anyone in the league. In the early years, he knew what he was doing a lot more than anyone else, I think it's fair to say. I think he'd been playing for a while before any of us, and kind of took us to task on trades quite frequently and things of that nature. He, for a long time, was kind of like, he'd really tried to lean into the, like, I'm the big dog in the schoolyard kind of persona with that, where he was like, I'm here to take your lunch money, I'm going to win, you know, and that's all there is to it. And last year he won, you know, he won the championship. I'll say since then, he's kind of, he sometimes will continue with the same kind of persona, but it's like his heart is not as fully in it. I think winning the championship did take a big load off his back. But I will tell you this, he does not want to wear the helmet, and it would be a sight. Derek is
have we ever had a first to worst?
I don't know. I mean, Ferry, I don't think so. I don't think we have.
I think Isaac may have done it in 2013. I'm on the spreadsheet. I think Isaac, one year after one of his championships, had a bad year. Oh, no.
Luke. What about Luke? Luke won it in 2017 and wore the helmet in 2018.
Okay.
So we have had it.
All right. He's done it.
Yeah, I think Derek with the helmet on would be quite a sight. And I will say, alongside there being kind of all these interesting playoff races going on and Colin and I fighting for the bye, the fact that the two guys who are out are specifically Luke and Vanna, and they have this other kind of battle for the helmet, I don't think you could ask for more than that in terms of the guys that are out, because you want to talk about interesting rivalries. Those two guys have something going on that is frankly hard to describe. and the closest I'll come to it is every year we go and we do, we call it Men's Fantasy Getaway, which is where we do our draft and kind of just hang out and have a good time for a few days. I believe it was 2016 or 2015. We had rented a house and we were playing wiffle ball. And those two guys, we all had kind of moved on to something else. And they got caught up in a game of one-on-one fast pitch wiffle ball against each other. And they played like their lives were on the line.
It was doggedly homoerotic.
So that is kind of gives you a little bit of context as to Derek, and as to specifically the rivalry with Luke for the helmet. And that's kind of where things stand for them.
Yeah, I agree somewhat with Vanna potentially not taking this as hard as he may have in timelines where he didn't already have a championship and a couple of pretty recent, very good seasons under his belt. But I do now worry that being down here in the basement and not getting to even sweat a spot in the playoffs may leave him fired up for next year. And that is a potentially nerve-wracking prospect there. But yeah, a huge amount at stake here between these two in the final week, even though there will not be any money distributed no matter what happens. But guys, I think let's get into the other four teams here with you, Wink, vying for three of these musical chairs that are going to be making the playoffs here in the hunt. We have a couple of teams at 12 and 12. one other team along with you, Wink, at 11-13, and then another guy at 10-14. So everyone within two games of each other with two games to go, and points are, incidentally, total points on the season are our tiebreaker in the case of games being tied. So that may potentially become relevant here, but I want to start with a guy who... Wink, I'm guessing you have been seeing at least a fair amount of, as all of this has been transpiring. Gabe here started 0-6 this season, an absolutely brutal situation that all of us fear in the early weeks. There is a huge disadvantage to be had if you are off to a bad start compared to people who get off to a good start and have a lot more flexibility going forward. Gabe, though, has rallied to 12-12 here in true scrambler fashion like we've seen out of him before, and honestly would be in much better shape if he didn't just keep getting these brutal matchups where he keeps losing despite being one of the top half scorers in the league. Gabe has, I think it's come up in passing, but I'll reiterate, Gabe has been one of the guys along with Vanna who has been in the championship each of the last 2 years. And Wink, I'm curious, after it looked like he might get off to a bad start, what has it been like watching Gabe go through this season, and what are the stakes here for Gabe in terms of his legacy within the league?
I mean, Gabe's relatively, you know, until things fully crumble, Gabe's up there for most mild-mannered as far as taking wins and losses in stride. You know, the only time I've seen him really upset in fantasy is like, it was maybe, I guess, 3 years ago now, where week 13, he was eliminated. And other than that, in his good and bad years, he always just kind of ambles along and seems to be content, thinking, you know, I've got a shot. And like we've talked about in the past, Gabe seems comfortable scrambling, which is intimidating to other teams. It's intimidating to a manager like myself, who's come to know and expect, you know, punishment and bad results regardless of what I do. Gabe is kind of the opposite, where, you know, he's down in an 0-6 hole and he's just looking up like, dude, it looks like it might not rain today. Like, it's less muddy on the sides of this hole. You know, I could probably crawl out. It might take me 3 weeks, but you know, climbing's kind of fun. You know, that's his mentality in fantasy, is just this outrageously, you know, cavalier attitude towards whatever his record is, and it serves him well. And I think he did a good job to get out of the McCaffrey injury hole. Part of that is aided in the fact that McCaffrey, as has been mentioned earlier, didn't miss the whole year, and last year was one of the best players in fantasy over like the past two decades. So he was able to rebuild a little bit from there, but he's made plenty of other good moves. He's right back in it, and he's on a good streak of scores here. You know, over the last 4 weeks, he had 1 week where he dipped just to 169. But other than that, he's been pushing 185 range most weeks. And, he's actually accumulated quite a good total point. So of these teams left to make the playoffs, I think Gabe has the best chance to get in, and he might have one of the better postseason records all time. So he's a dangerous man come playoff time. You don't like to see Gabe or Ike get in the playoffs with you, because
you know Gabe is
history to them advancing. Yeah,
you know Gabe has been, sorry, you know he's been thinking about week 14 and beyond and trading for the guys with good matchups this whole time, and it's just going to be horrifying to watch all of that play out probably. But yeah, he is sitting at the top of the pack here and does control his own destiny if things go well for him here. And to just circle back to the first thing you got into about Gabe, I completely agree. Gabe is, as far as I've essentially ever been able to see, borderline unflappable, and for my money, I don't even know who would be a close second out of the members of the league. I think Gabe would be the runaway best Survivor player out of everyone in this group. So, Matt, what do you think about Gabe and his kind of aloof persona and willingness to let things slide and how that factors into the kind of larger group dynamic?
I would say overall, I admire it. I think that his ability to take things in stride is something that does serve anyone well in life, because life does throw things at you. I mean, I think specifically in fantasy over the last couple of years, he's been pretty fortunate in how things have played out. Specifically last season, he was very lucky to get into the playoffs, and once he was there, everything kind of broke his way. So he sort of waltzed into a second, which, you know, you can't blame him for it, but at the same time, I think it's kind of, you know, it's nice to – it's easy to smile when the sun's shining kind of mm-hmm. situation there. But like you say with Gabe, I agree. I don't think that he necessarily is somebody who's not going to be smiling anyway. And I will say this season, I think he's got a really good team. I think he lost McCaffrey earlier in the year, and he's built back from that really well. And actually, the last 3 weeks, he's had a very difficult schedule. He's gone up against a top three scorer in each of those weeks. So he probably should already have clinched a spot in the playoffs. And I would agree with Christian that he's in the driver's seat. I would love to see Gabe get a head-to-head win this week, because he is playing against Colin, which would really open up my path to a bye. But yeah, I mean, I'm not thrilled about the prospect of Gabe getting into the playoffs, because he has historically had a lot of success there, and I do think his team can score a lot of points. So
yeah, it's like Wink said, where when the guy seems to be chipper, even when everything's breaking wrong, it's terrifying when you're up against him when things are going right. It seems like the world is his oyster. Gabe, it seems like, is in a good spot as things stand right now, but definitely could still theoretically miss here. There are some guys a bit lower down in this pack that have certainly ruined playoff dreams before, myself very much included. But yeah, I think Gabe would for sure be a fan favorite if this were something people were actually sweating. Another guy sitting here at 12-12 is the action himself, Andy Ferrier, who started off 9-3 here this season, and by virtue of seemingly kind of endless trading, he eventually wound up with the guys he generally likes, which are just the biggest names you can possibly get. Except the problem for him this year is Mike Thomas and Christian McCaffrey, and I think there was someone else even, potentially along those lines, that he ended up trading for, that seemed promising to come back later, but things did not necessarily go as planned there. And then in the back half of the season so far, he has gone 3-9 and is now potentially having to sweat out a playoff spot that seemed like it was locked up within the first month or so. I have certainly not done nearly enough justice to the degree to which Andy is responsible for how active the league is in terms of trading and just kind of general roster adjustments. Wink, describe for us, if you can, how vital of a role Andy plays in keeping the wheels greased here.
Oh, it's tough to give him enough credit. I mean, in any other league I've played in, present or past, I mean, there's nothing like the trade volume that we see. And if we were able to measure, you know, how many trades, percentage of trades that go through Andy, it's appallingly lopsided. And it just makes the game that much more fun, because not only are you looking around for people you might want to dump off or receive from a different team, you're really watching with a keen eye every trade that happens, because the second someone lands on Andy's squad, boom, that's now the liaison to you obtaining that player. So with him always changing, yet always being open, it's like going into a store that always has fresh inventory. You know, you can waltz on in, you're going to see a couple of shirts you didn't see last week, you know? So it's very entertaining for the league, and it really allows, I think, the other nine of us to mix it up more than we might otherwise, because it's hard to trade with certain people. Everyone has their guys they mesh with in talks and the guys they don't. So if Andy's meshing with everyone, it really just opens a lot of doors. So he's an integral member of the league, undoubtedly.
Yeah, and this approach worked out swimmingly for many, many years, although seems to have just been backfiring these last few. I think it's been...
Those were also the years I didn't have internet, so, you know, I may have been largely to blame for early on. I mean, I was gone to literally the public library once a week and just looking at offers, and 8 of them out of 10 were Andy, so.
Yeah. Matt, Andy was a perennial powerhouse, although up until these, I think it was both 2018 and 2019, things have kind of been going the other direction for him. How much do you feel like is at stake in terms of Andy's status within the GM hierarchy here after the way things have gone this year and how things may play out?
You know, I'm not really sure how much is at stake for Andy. I think that he definitely could use a good year, but then I ask myself, okay, if he misses the playoffs, is he really going to be, is he going to take a big hit in the eyes of the majority of league members? And I'm just not sure. And I think it's because people know kind of what he's trying to do, and they respect that strategy, even if they may not necessarily have the stomach for it themselves. They kind of like the idea that Andy's going to take big risks and make big moves. And so, you know, sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. He's definitely a gambler. I think this year it's been interesting because early in the year, when he was kind of taking on guys that were hurt with the hopes that they'd come back later in the season, he actually had a bunch of good weeks while those guys were still on his bench. And then as things kind of played out, guys that he expected to do really well, you know, kind of haven't. And so he's had like a rough stretch these last, I don't know, 6 or 7 or whatever it is, weeks, and kind of put himself in this spot where he is really in the fight here. He could easily get in and he could easily miss. So it'll be interesting to see with Andy, but I think he'll be, I mean, I drafted him high, you know, I drafted him with my second pick, I think. So
very disrespectful.
I question it sometimes because I think he's a little too willing to take on, you know, a trade that might not work for him, but that's why we love him. And that's, he does drive the action. I completely agree with that. So,
yeah, every league would be lucky to have an Andy there. So let's go over now to the other Christian, Christian Pieri here. Like you, Christian Winkelhofer, sitting at 11-13, and like Gabe, also started 0-6, but has rallied back here to almost, I think, control his own, I think potentially control his own destiny entering this week. And we have certainly seen things of this nature out of Pieri before. He is probably my most cited example of why you should not give up after bad starts to fantasy football seasons. He had a season a few years ago. He through the first 7 weeks was 3-11 in a league where you generally need to be getting at least to 12-14 or so if you want any hope of making the playoffs. And he rallied back to finish 13-13 and actually finish third overall in the regular season that year. He has once again shown that he's willing to put his nose down to the grindstone and seems to have really turned things around here. Matthew, Pieri would tell us that he is incapable of catching a break. Do you feel like that is the case? And do you feel like this could potentially be the year that he catches the ultimate break?
I do not feel like Christian is incapable of catching a break. I think Christian does catch breaks from time to time. I do think that this year he could catch the ultimate break. Pierre's team, it's been a really interesting season for him. It's been a season of streaks. He's had two 0-6 streaks with a 7-1 and 4-0 on either side of them. And so it's like sometimes we're kind of convinced his team's going to go away, and then it just comes roaring back. And he has Derrick Henry, who seems like he's a threat any given week to put up 50. So I'll say that Pierre's team is one that I'm concerned about heading into the playoffs, should I not get the bye and have to do a week 14 dance. But I do think Christian catches a break now and then. As he mentioned, divisional opponent of mine, and he did not get a point from Calvin Ridley. Or no, maybe that's not true. He got some, but I think a quarter's worth out of eight, a quarter's worth of scoring from Calvin Ridley this year against me. So I haven't forgotten.
Yes. And Wink, how would you describe the presence of Christian Pieri within our group of managers here?
Oh, his presence.
Maybe that's the wrong word. I was trying not to use the word vibe again.
No, presence is fine. I mean, I'd say ever watchful. You Pieri, much like his name, if anyone were to embody Christ himself, albeit named for a believer in Christ or otherwise, it would be Pieri. You know, he's a big believer in following rules. I'll speak for myself and probably the rest of the league when I say, if you're debating something that, you know, maybe hasn't been done, maybe is on the edge of what is or isn't acceptable by the book, in the back of your head, you think, man, Pieri, WWPD, you know, what would Pieri do in this situation? And I think because of that and his long tenure as the author of the Jennings report, people hold him to a lofty standard of respect, especially for one of the four league members that has yet to cash in as a champion. But he's a grinder. He seems to be, I know he's had his bad years, but I feel historically like he's in the mix most years. And despite his mantra that he can't catch a break, I think that he can and he does. And here he is in an almost controls his own destiny situation. He essentially does. I'd have to go 2-0 and outscore him by 50 for his 2-0 not to matter. So he's looking good, although he's drawn Lucas. So he's probably feeling pretty good. I think out of the teams that are left, Adam's the most desperate, and I'd say debatably Gabe and secondly Pieri are the most comfortable. They both also have the most points out of the five of us vying for those three spots. So
yeah, the points are potentially at least and probably going to end up being pretty relevant here. Pieri, a deeply analytical man, and we all appreciate that very much. Famously researches players' hand sizes before he trades for them. No detail too minute to overlook here, and that is certainly something worth respecting in many contexts here. Matt, though, if things were to go Pieri's way, he not only puts a lot of thought into everything, every transaction he makes, but also potentially someone that the average league member would view as kind of a nit when it comes to the trade scene and making big roster shakeups. Do you feel like if Pieri were to not just this year, but really establish himself this year and beyond for a stretch here as a regular contender, that the Pieri philosophy may have a renaissance?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I think that the appeal of action itself is pretty high, but I also do think that making trades is frequently the best play. And so I think because of that, people in the league have sort of are more open to trading than in a lot of other leagues, because we've had such a history of it. And like we said, we can thank Andy for that. But I think Christian would certainly get respect if he won a championship. I mean, he's had a bunch of seconds, although it's been a while now. But I don't see like a big shift in league-wide philosophy to follow were he to win one.
I think that's probably right. And it is worth mentioning. Some people may think we're just like crazy degenerates trading who start like 7 or 8 people a week. We start pretty deep rosters. It's a 2-quarterback league. We have 3 starting wide receivers, 2 starting running backs, a tight end, 2 flexes, and a defense. So there is a lot more incentive to make sure that you're getting some high efficiency out of all of your roster spots. We play, you have to start more guys, and thus starting a bunch of bad ones is a lot worse than it is in other leagues. And different people have different preferences for how balanced they want their teams to be. So it all plays, it all ties nicely into itself in terms of creating great conditions. Even setting aside Ferrier for the trade scene being pretty active. And then when you add Andy on top of that, it's just going to be a blitz pretty much the whole time. And also, we have no trade deadline. As long as consenting adults who are on teams that are still vying for a championship want to trade, they are welcome to do so all the way through the championship week itself, if they are so inclined. And then our final team here is sitting at 10-14. Stop me if you guys have heard this before. I guess none of the listeners will have heard this before, but revisiting one of his favorite storylines, I guess, in terms of season-long trajectory, Lloyd had a blow-up week in week 1, which it seems like kind of got his hopes up about how good his players would be going forward, and then immediately fell back to earth for the next month and a half or so, and wasn't in too great of a position, but has just kind of hung around long enough, as he always does. It seems like no matter what Lloyd does, even in his worst years, he's always there to at least play spoiler in the end, which he did for me last year, and may be in the perfect position to do so yet again here in 2020, to just kind of make a late run and ruin someone else's playoff dreams. But Christian, what do you think about Lloyd, and not necessarily so much his chances here? He's certainly going to need some things to break right if he's going to find himself in the postseason. But the Lloyd kind of story within the league.
Yeah, I mean, as long as I've been in the league, Adam has not been respected. He's a trod upon man. And I think the saddest part for me is that as much as I love Adam as a human, I agree with the gripe he gets. I'm looking at the moves right now for this year, and obviously those are, part of that is just preference, you know, but for a guy that has had at least 4 people go to IR, he's had 18 season-long moves. That includes trades, you know, drops, ads, you know, everything. He just does not like to mix it up. He picks his boys and he sticks with them. And he's been accused of picking the same players year after year, which he has done a good job of debunking partially, Matt Ryan being a glaring exclusion. But I just don't think his strategy, devoted to it as he is helpful to get him out of his current view the league has put him in. So I always root for Adam. This week I will not be rooting for him. I'm rooting against everyone that could keep me out of playoffs. But Adam is a wonderful man, and just is lacking in some of his managerial thought processes. And I'd like to see him try some new things in the future. He strikes me in the fantasy realm as, you know, a guy that eats Annie's mac and cheese and white bread grilled cheese sandwiches and orders pizza. He just eats the white foods. He doesn't
push the bounds of what may or may not be comfortable to him. And I'd like to see him, you know, dine out at an Indian or a Thai restaurant. And perhaps he likes the spice. Perhaps, you know, a masala curry is right up his alley. We don't know. But until you try, you know, you're just going to keep eating or doing the same things. And no one likes to hit their head against a wall. And I feel that that's where Adam is at this point in his fantasy career.
I feel like he was kind of thrown off from the jump here when in our draft, it seemed like he didn't intend to win the bid for Lamar Jackson, but it just kind of fell to him and it threw off everything for his whole season going forward there. But yeah, I think that would probably be the consensus concern about Lloyd's kind of overall strategy is the lack of willingness to make moves. And Matt, we saw this year perhaps an all-time example of that, not to just pile on Adam here, who has certainly had a reasonable enough year to still be in the hunt, and this could all backfire tremendously, and we could be here a month from now talking about him as our new champion. But his commitment to his players perhaps reached historic highs this year, Matthew, when he did what?
Yeah, so Lloyd in week 7 matched up against Lucas, who I believe at the time was the I think he had the worst record. He was one of the weaker teams. Adam chose to not start a defense, which is the first time in our league's history that we've had somebody not start a player at one of the starting positions. And he did it so that he would not have to drop another player from his roster. He might have had some guys on bye. Yeah, he had Lamar Jackson on bye and Adam Thielen. But, you know, it's never been done before. He ended up losing by about 15, which a defense can certainly put up. So I'll just say I think Adam listening to this segment would probably say that he's had a pretty bad run of luck this year. And I think there's something to that. I think he's been hit hard by injuries and guys getting COVID at bad times and things like that. But at the same time, I think not starting a player is pretty much indefensible. I don't think he really got as much heat for it as it probably deserved. Because I think just at a fundamental level, it's like you have to start as many players as you can. And the guys that he wanted to hold on to were not necessarily guys to write home about. I believe Dallas Goedert on IR at the time was one of those guys, and I think that's somebody that you can drop safely if it means locking in another starting position. So I don't like when people get fixated on one mistake and say, like, oh, if you had done that differently, everything would have been different. But I do think it's a fair thing to point to and say you probably should have started a defense, and it comes from this tendency to get attached to the boys and not want to pull the trigger on moves.
Yeah.
And you know, I drafted Adam first overall and said I thought that there might be some of that this year coming from him.
Yes, you did. You flagged up exactly that this is going to be a year where we're probably going to have to make more roster adjustments than usual. And with that in mind, Adam is a pretty appealing person to have in your division compared to pretty much anyone else. But I do definitely want to stress, while we have probably been kind of harsh on his fantasy decision making this year, he's certainly doing better, first of all, than Luke and Vanna have this year. And furthermore, I would say, a very valuable member of the group. I don't remember, unfortunately, it's been like 20 years since I've seen either of these movies, and I may just be making up that this person exists in either of them in the first place, but I feel like in one of either Remember the Titans or the movie version of Friday Night Lights, there's some guy on the team who like doesn't talk the whole time and then has this like awesome speech at the very end and fires everyone up. And that's how I feel like Lloyd is. And sorry if that person doesn't exist in either of those movies.
Yeah.
I think you're thinking of Spike in Land Before Time, the cartoon dinosaur trilogy. He finally speaks in an integral bridge collapse scene. So perhaps that's who you're referencing Adam with.
That is perhaps the case there. maybe some Radio Raheem vibes. That may be putting a little too much weight on it. But yeah, Adam, going to be an interesting weekend for him here. And I don't know where his expectations are at this moment, but I'm hoping he is coming from a place of cautious optimism with his fingers crossed, and hopefully won't take it too hard in the timelines where it doesn't go right. But if I were Lloyd, or someone sweating against Lloyd, which thankfully I am not in this situation, I would be very nervous. I've just seen too many times out of Lloyd that he sneaks through in spots where I've counted him out for months. So definitely going to be keeping an eye on that there. So guys, week 13 on the horizon, kicks off tomorrow, and I guess we will find out on Tuesday night, I think, is the last game this week, how all of that will shake out. And if people ended up liking this podcast, we are certainly down to continue this sort of coverage on the main feed. And if not, I'm certainly happy to keep doing it with you guys behind closed doors. But I certainly don't want to rush either of you out of here, because a vital piece of the reason these podcasts even exist in the first place is to give league members an opportunity to air unfiltered any kind of grievances they may have or any points they want to make without being interrupted or ignored. Matthew, is there anything at this point in time that you want to put out there, particularly towards our fellow league members, about the state of the situation entering week 13?
Well, I would actually, Colin, like to get your reaction to a trade that went through while we were on the air here. It looks like I have made a trade with Christian Winkelhofer.
Wow.
Where I have traded him Deshaun Watson, Miles Gaskin, and somehow three fab dollars in exchange for Aaron Rodgers.
Let me pull this back up here. Let me load up my Yahoo. Yes, we play on Yahoo, free promo, I guess, to them, app here, and go to the league transactions, because all of that just hit. Okay, hang on. I'm only seeing, oh, you said three fab dollars. I'm sorry. I thought I was waiting for another player to be the third item there. Okay, we have Deshaun Watson and Miles Gaskin for Aaron Rodgers. I mean, the first thing I would like to know that I do not, unfortunately, seem to be able to pull up right away is their matchups for these next few weeks, because I assume that was a consideration for you, Matt. I will certainly not be objecting to it if you feel like the matchups are more in favor for Rodgers, but I wouldn't have been like dying to be trading Deshaun Watson, even with Will Fuller out. So what were the key considerations here for you in wanting to do this?
So we had talked about this for the last few weeks, something like this. Deshaun Watson has a pretty difficult playoff schedule. He plays Indianapolis twice. He plays them this week and then once in the playoffs. They have a really good defense against the pass. Rodgers has a really good playoff schedule. So I think it's a quarterback upgrade. And I had Gaskin on my bench, actually, just because I was fortunate enough to have a bunch of other running backs with good matchups this week. And so I felt like he was an upgrade over a couple of guys that Wink would be starting in a must-win spot. And so I thought it made sense. He somehow got $3 out of me, despite the trade evaluator heavily favoring him.
Wow, Wink, well executed. Are you very happy with your side of the trade, or did you feel like this was a mandatory move on your part? And
I had been holding on to Rodgers because he has, I would argue, the most cupcake schedule in the playoffs of any quarterback in the league. So I understand why Matt was trying to obtain that. And he and Watson have been on par with each other throughout the year. I'm guessing Watson has a few more points, but Rodgers has been very consistent. But I found myself kind of in scramble mode this week and very happy that my gamble to nearly whole roll on Devontae Booker and hope that he got the start and hope Jacobs missed. That paid off, which was big for me this week. But I was looking at Hunter Renfro in the flex after that, and then, God willing, I make the playoffs, I would be back to just Chris Carson next week and Todd Gurley, who I have no respect for and dislike. Not sure why I traded for him in the first place. So I thought Myles Gaskin was very helpful to me this week against the Bengals, as well as going forward. And I view Watson as hopefully going to be on par with Rodgers for the rest of the year. So I'm hoping I stole a free Myles Gaskin off of Matt. But Rodgers has a great schedule the rest of the way. I'm sad to see him go. He's done a fantastic job for the organization here. I got to try to go 2-0 this week. So
yeah,
that's what factored into that for me.
No, I think this is a perfect illustration of something I've talked a little bit about in terms of just like end game theory that I believe in, which is even Aaron Rodgers with an awesome playoff schedule, which I absolutely agree, Matt, is a great thing to be trading for in your situation. Deshaun Watson is at least some reasonable number of percentage points of equity to just flat out outscore Aaron Rodgers over whatever it's going to be, a 3 or 4 game sample here, and you may have just gotten like a free Myles Gaskin and some bonus points. I think there is a lot of merit in the 1-for-2 in plenty of different circumstances with such a small sample size of games remaining. But before, actually, now that I'm on it, we get to the airing of grievances, if any, that you want to put out there. Wink, for the people who have become potential fans of Team Wink here and want to see you succeed this weekend, we now have Deshaun Watson here, but who are the other big guys in your lineup that you would like people to keep in their thoughts?
Oh, I mean, we got Chris Carson, who is the only member of my team whom I drafted and have kept with me. He's kind of my Samwise Gamgee if I were the flailing Frodo Baggins. So he's my rock. He came back last week in a limited role. I'd love to see him just have an increase back to RB1 style role this week. He's playing the Giants, who are a fair enough defense. There's supposed to be weather. I'm hoping they really lean on him. That limits the other Seahawks. I'd like a big ground game there. And then, Taysom Hill, if I were to try to convince myself that I could ever be in the NFL, Taysom Hill is like the guy that I still shamelessly daydream about being. He's the coolest player. So love having him on the squad. And if you wanted to have one more person in your thoughts, it would be someone that even our avid, you know, fantasy player listeners might have missed. Is a guy I'm really excited to start this week. Famous last words, Anthony Firkser for the Tennessee Titans. He is a very, very athletic, runs a lot of slot routes for the Titans, receiving tight end. And with Jonnu Smith out, I'm ecstatic to have him in the lineup. And I know that sounds absolutely silly, and it could sound even sillier after Sunday, but please keep Anthony Firkser in your thoughts.
Okay, will do.
I'm really excited for a big week for him.
All right. Matthew, how about you? Who are you hoping people can sprinkle some good juju on? Probably not Juju Smith-Schuster because he's on my team.
I'll just say really quickly, when I was looking to make that trade with Wink, I considered doing something for tight end as well. And then I saw that he had this guy Firkser in there, and I thought, that's got to be a Wink guy. He's not – with a name like that, he's not looking to make any moves at tight end. So, if you are interested in rooting for my team, Team Matt, the centerpiece of the team is the Patrick Mahomes to Tyreek Hill connection. Love watching those guys. Great week for me last week. Beyond that – you know, now I have Aaron Rodgers. It was Deshaun Watson, but Aaron Rodgers. DeAndre Hopkins, hoping to see him turn it around. Justin Jefferson, who is having a great rookie season for the Vikings, which is a team I watch every week. And then Austin Eckler is playing against the Patriots. So we hope the Patriots win, but we hope that Austin has a good game. So, and Antonio Gibson as well. So I've got some boys on the squad this year. and hoping to see another big week from them. So please join me in rooting for specifically Mahomes and Hill. I feel like that's the one connection where I try to watch every offensive play, because it feels like they're always a threat to have like a 65-yard touchdown.
Yeah. I too would probably watch every offensive play if any given one of them was liable to score me like 30 points in one shot there. I would say if you are less inclined to be supporting Matthew here and you would like to see me get the bye, first and foremost, just pray for Dalvin Cook's hamstring. I would very much like to see him get some sort of positive assurances pregame that he's going to get a regular workload. And I am honestly tempted. Oh, actually, breaking news, Alexander Mattison is out, so I will not be starting both of them just to hedge against the possibility that they manage his workload there. And furthermore, I would say just root for good game flow for Russ Wilson and Justin Herbert. Those are really the only things on my team that matter. Everything else is pretty incidental. I need those three guys to do really well, or I'm going to be in trouble here. Wink, if there is anything that you wanted to get out there in the way of messages to other league members in terms of things that have transpired in the thread or elsewhere over this last week, any words of warning or things of that nature before we get out of here, by all means, I do not want to prevent you from doing so.
No, I mean, I'm just hoping I finally find my way into the postseason for only the second time ever. You know, we've had some dark days. So here's to eking in after a couple of rough weeks.
All right. I'm guessing at least many people out there are going to be pulling for you here. And Matthew, any particular complaints that you wanted to address here this week?
No complaints from me, Colin. No grievances. I watched Godfather 2 and it reminded me of the futility of revenge. So I'd say my mindset now is much more that of somebody trying to climb a mountain, feeling like I can see the top, it's within my sight, but I'm not quite there, and I need to keep pushing. Like Wink, there's been a lot of dark days, and there's been some dark nights as well. And so I'm hoping that it can all turn around, and but no grievances. No
okay.
Grievances from me.
Good to hear. Well, guys, thank you so much for taking all the time that you have here with me today, and whoever has made it this far, let me know. I am certainly happy to keep posting these if it seems like people are into them. And I believe we're probably going to be recording something one way or the other next week regardless. So back here for that after we see how all of this plays out. Best of luck to both of you two gentlemen. Not so much Cav, actually, as far as week 13 is concerned. But looking forward to this big, exciting conclusion here. So we will talk to you guys potentially very soon, potentially not, but probably very soon about how all of this plays out. And I think that is going to finally wrap us up. So until next time, take care, everybody.